In the wake of the collapse of Enron, Congress passed the Sarbanes-Oxley Act in 2002. The legislation was supposed to expand protections for corporate whistleblowers, but the agency charged with carrying out the law, the U.S. Department of Labor, has dismissed the vast majority of whistleblower claims. We're joined now by Michael Hudson, a staff writer with the Center for Public Integrity, and I'm very pleased it brings him to our show for today's second underreported segment. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay. In the 8 years that the law has been in effect, the U.S. Department of Labor has tossed out 1,066 whistleblower claims and upheld just 25, which means that only 2% of employees seeking whistleblower status have actually been granted it. Do we know why the number is so low?
Well, you know, critics of the agency say it's you know, because during the Bush years, the agency wasn't exactly friendly to workers and whistleblowers, and that it so narrowly interpreted the law that the whistleblowers who inspired this thing, the Enron whistleblowers, wouldn't have even been protected under this law. You know, you can have all the laws on the books that you want, but if the government isn't going to enforce them, whistleblowers are going to be left out in the cold.
Has it changed at all now that the Obama administration is in charge of the Department of Labor?
Well, the administration has promised to do a top-to-bottom review of the Sarbanes-Oxley whistleblower program, and they've already made some changes that seem to be sympathetic to whistleblowers' needs. So, you know, we'll see. It's a big problem, though, because, you know, for so many years, the message has been sent, according to whistleblower advocates, that whistleblowers shouldn't come forward, that they're not going to be protected. So, encouraging people to, you know, to come forward and you know, take on a take on their employer that might be a company with $1 billion profits and, you know, teams of lawyers. You know, that's a big step, and that's hard to do. So when folks hear that they're not going to be protected, and often, you know, some of the attorneys who represent whistleblowers will tell them that, you know, this is a really big step. This is, you know, and your chances of winning are, you know, can be pretty low in this situation.
We've just been talking about libel tourism, how people can sue American writers in other countries for libel, even if there is no real libel involved. And our First Amendment rights here protect us, but it seems that that doesn't necessarily extend to whistleblowers. What kinds of legal protections does whistleblower status grant under Sarbanes-Oxley?
Well, you know, if you report fraud under Sarbanes-Oxley, report fraud that involves accounting issues or, you know, anything that can really appreciably affect the company's, you know, stock price. In other words, they may be hiding problems which will come out later and, you know, and hurt shareholders, or anything that's a violation of Securities and Exchange Commission rules. Then you're supposed to be able to come forward and tell that. And if your company retaliates against you, threatens you, fires you, demotes you, you're supposed to be able to get your job back. And not just after 2 years, but the Department of Labor actually has the power to very quickly, you know, do a quick review of the case, and within weeks or at least months, you know, a couple months, be able to order the employer to put the employee back to work at the same position, same salary, et cetera.
Now, do you have to apply for whistleblower status first, or is this something you do after the company is retaliating for you are leaking this information?
Well, you know, and often we're not talking about leaking. We're not talking about workers, say, leaking it to an outside, to a reporter. We're actually talking about reporting, you know, inside the company, doing, you know, what you're supposed to do. Because, you know, most companies, you know, they talk about having an open-door policy and encouraging folks to speak up about problems. But, you know, the reality in the real world is that bosses often don't like to be challenged. And they either don't want or aren't equipped to deal with the headaches of dealing with a complaint about serious wrongdoing. You know, denial is a big force in workplace settings, that, you know, just as it is in personal relationships. So you don't have to apply for whistleblower status before you blow the whistle, before you make a report internally or make a report, say, to a regulatory agency. such as the Securities and Exchange Commission. But, you know, once you're retaliated against, then, you know, you have the right to file a complaint through the Department of Labor to be protected.
Well, if you blow the whistle, apply for protection, the protection is denied, as has happened in 98% of the cases, what happens to you?
Well, I mean, a lot of people are out on the street. They lose their jobs, and you know, it's hard to get another job, right? If you have a reputation, if you've been fired by your previous employer, and you have a reputation as a troublemaker.
Now, would Harry Markopoulos be called a whistleblower, because he really wasn't working for Bernard Madoff when he went to the SEC and told them that Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme? He was ignored, but he wasn't punished.
Right. I guess in a broad definition of whistleblower, he would be a whistleblower. He's someone who raised questions, serious questions about problems. And, you know, and to some degree, he put himself in hazard because, you know, Madoff could have sued him for libel, you know, or taken some other kind of action against him. You know, when you're anytime you're taking on a large, powerful person with lots of money, you're kind of putting yourself at hazard. But he wouldn't have qualified under the Sarbanes-Oxley whistleblower statute, because that's for employees of publicly traded companies.
Well, Madoff's sons turned him in. Were they being whistleblowers in the true sense?
You know, I don't know enough about the sons' situation, but it sounds like I guess they would be.
Although I don't think that they thought of themselves that way. They were just concerned that perhaps that they were going to wind up being prosecuted for illegal activities. Investigations of Sarbanes-Oxley whistleblower claims is controlled by the Labor Department's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. Is that the right agency for this? Because doesn't that just deal with occupational hazards like you know, people complaining that some of the machinery is unsafe?
Right. I mean, you know, that is an argument some folks have made. At one point, whistleblower investigations under the Department of Labor were made by the Wage and Hour Division, and they switched it over to OSHA. You know, you can make an argument that OSHA is not the right agency, but you can also just make an argument that it doesn't necessarily matter what agency it's under. What matters is do you have the staffing and do you have the will, the political will and the bureaucratic will to investigate these cases and do what's right.
As you mentioned earlier in your article, you quote a Washington, D.C. employment lawyer as saying, the very whistleblowers who inspired this whole thing, the Enron whistleblowers, wouldn't be protected under the agency's reading of the law. How are they reading the law?
Well, you know, there were lots of you know, legal opinions and just decisions made that tended to narrow who qualified as a whistleblower. One of the big issues was, and that's actually they're trying to correct that legislatively now. One of the big issues was whether or not someone who worked for a privately held subsidiary of a public traded company would qualify, and there were arguments that no, that they wouldn't, because they're, you know, because the actual company they work for. But of course, you can have a publicly traded company that only has 50 employees, but then has dozens of subsidiaries with tens of thousands of employees who are doing the actual work of the umbrella company, who are technically in privately held companies. So, you know, that was one of the arguments, and that was one of the reasons. Also, just things like statute of limitations, did folks file their claims quickly enough? Those kind of things have made it difficult for people to gain whistleblower status.
So this is only applies to publicly traded companies, because the real concern is about hurting shareholders?
Right, hurting shareholders. And so, you know, that's one of the—
Not malfeasance.
Well, you know, malfeasance is part of it, but it's basically, you know, violating Securities and Exchange Commission rules or hurting shareholders. And you know, a lot of concern over the years, both in the media and with government investigators, has been, you know, how well shareholders are treated. As you know, it should be a concern, but often how well consumers are treated, you know, the company's customers, is something that often has not been given as much attention, even though, of course, how well the consumers are treated, as we saw with the subprime mortgage debacle, in the end can have a big effect on the shareholders. Shareholders may make money in the short term, but when the thing blew up, lots of people lost lots of money.
Just recently, the SEC said it would pay $1 million to a Connecticut couple for providing information and documents which helped build an insider trading case. So does that suggest a change? And is this the future? $1 million, a lot of money.
There is some a movement to basically give employees bounties for reporting securities violations. I think that's included in the newly passed financial reform law.
Up to 30%.
What's that?
Up to 30% of any monetary sanction. That's a lot of money.
Some of the other whistleblower laws already have bounties, and at least one of the whistleblower advocates I talked to said that he didn't think the bounties were that effective, that often people didn't get the money, you know, that they were promised, and that it becomes kind of a pipe dream. So how effective that will be is unclear.
Well, that case with the Connecticut couple involves the hedge fund Pequot Capital Management. Is there a difference between how whistleblowers are publicly are dealt with in publicly traded companies like that, privately held organizations like hedge funds are treated by the law?
Right. There's definitely, I mean, the Sarbanes-Oxley law focuses exclusively on employees of publicly traded companies. And so for other, you know, there are other whistleblower laws, and there's also state whistleblower laws, and there are some whistleblower protections through the Securities and Exchange Commission. But, you know, there's different levels of protection. So you may be less protected if you work for a privately held company.
Now,
One thing I want to mention is you know, the sort of lack of protection for whistleblowers really goes a long ways toward explaining, you know, why the problems of, you know, predatory lending and, you know, Wall Street fraud were allowed to grow as big as they did, so big that they, you know, basically crashed our economy. You know, folks were either afraid to come forward or didn't think it would do much good because, you know, government and media hadn't shown a lot of interest in these issues.
Now, something like the WikiLeaks controversy, those 90,000 pages of secret documents, that has nothing to do with this because that involves the government?
Yeah, well, there are also government whistleblowers. There are laws for government employees also who are whistleblowers, who if you work for the Department of Agriculture or you work for the Securities and Exchange Commission and you think there's something going on that it's, you know, violation of the law or some sort of fraud or tax dollars being wasted, you know, you can, you know, make a report and be protected. But, you know, there's also arguments that those laws aren't as well enforced as they could be. And, you know, the reality is when you're one person taking on a large bureaucracy, whether it's a big company or a government agency, you know, the odds can be stacked against you unless you have a good law, a good attorney, and some other government agency, you know, acting as your advocate and determining the facts and seeing if there's any merit to your claims.
Michael Hudson is with the Center for Public Integrity, and we've been talking about why whistleblowers have not gotten the protection that they expected to get from Sarbanes-Oxley in the aftermath of the Enron scandal. Thank you so much for talking with us on today's Underreported.
Thanks, Leonard. I appreciate the chance.